Moscow today is claiming great credit for the release of two American flyers whose imprisonment in the first place we have condemned as an act of piracy, and the killing of the other four members of the crew was murder. Moscow, however, describes its action as another goodwill gesture which shows that the USSR is ready to wipe out the past and turn over a new leaf in Soviet-US relations. This gesture cost the Russians nothing, and therefore is not evidence of any real change of attitude. For such a change to be proved, it would have to be demonstrated by Soviet action in relation to the world's present areas of tension. And these are not the general problems of disarmament or nuclear testing there to be found in Laos, in the Congo, and in Cuba. In Moscow today, it was made clear that the Soviets are unwilling to accept a British proposal that the International Control Commission for Laos resume work accredited to the King. The whole trouble in Laos stems from communist military action intended to subvert the neutrality which the Reds profess to desire for Laos. In the Congo, the Reds are encouraging various nations to withdraw their troops from the UN command and are aiding the activities of Lumumba supporters who are rapidly driving the country toward more bloodshed. UN Secretary Hammarskjöld declared today that if Egypt and Morocco and Indonesia do withdraw their troops, the whole UN operation may have to be disbanded, which would be a dangerous triumph for the Reds and increase world tensions. In Cuba, the Soviet and Chinese communists continue to be extremely active in establishing a communist revolutionary foothold in the Western Hemisphere itself. These three areas, Laos, the Congo, and Cuba, provide the real test points for Khrushchev to demonstrate the change of heart for which Moscow is taking voluble credit. Until he commits himself to a real reduction of anti-American activities in these areas, all his talk of wanting better relations with us will remain suspect as mere propaganda. This is David Will.
President Kennedy presided today over the first formal meeting of his cabinet. It lasted 2.5 hours, and all 10 members joined in a discussion of the problems facing the new administration. Sitting in were Vice President Lyndon Johnson, United Nations Ambassador Adlai Stevenson, Budget Director David Bell, and Economic Council Chairman Walter Heller. Much of the discussion centered on the State of the Union message, which Mr. Kennedy will deliver Monday before a joint session of Congress. Elsewhere in Washington, a conference of 350 farm leaders came to an end just about where it started. They agreed that most farmers are unhappy over their economic condition, but they disagreed violently over what the government ought to do about it. President James Patton of the Farmers Union said the farmers have so many organizations speaking for them that it sounds like a babble of voices. Patton's organization wants the government to step in with a strong program of production controls. At the opposite end is the Farm Bureau Federation, which wants less government control and the elimination of price support. Meanwhile, three-star extra learns that House Speaker Sam Rayburn's plan for speeding up action on the Kennedy legislative program may never come to a vote. The proposal to liberalize the Rules Committee by increasing its membership is scheduled for a vote on Tuesday. But before that time, there may be a compromise between Rayburn and the opposition leader, Rules Committee Chairman Howard Smith. Under the deal now being discussed secretly, Smith would agree to allow key measures of the Kennedy program to be cleared for House debate. Rayburn, in turn, would not press his resolution to enlarge Smith's committee, but would keep it handy for possible future use. The compromise would save face for both sides and avoid what could become a serious split among the Democrats. This is Ned Brooks.
The ever-crusading Senator McClellan, defender of the people's rights in many cases, who has just finished grilling some mighty tough characters, is off on another probe. This time, it's rockets, not rackets, that he's after. He has been angered by the excess waste of millions on millions of dollars, and those are his words, at the air and missile bases around the United States, which are now under construction and which are now experimenting in skyscraping with our new rockets. These wastages have resulted from strikes and feuds between unions. He has been angered, and he calls this a national scandal. For example, he has learned that there has been at least one jurisdictional strike every 20 days somewhere on some defense base somewhere around the United States. There has been at least one such strike every 4 days in special missile bases, and this is something he's determined to expose and stop. He is now talking with Lyndon Johnson and other senatorial leaders in an effort to get the authority to call in union officials as well as those who work for the government. What has especially angered him, for example, has been an incident such as that which developed on December the 21st at Cape Canaveral. He was going through when he discovered, for example, that a small union, the Bridge Iron and Structural Workers, had struck the Titan installations because a firm in northern New Jersey had gotten a $25,000 contract for camera and stairway access belts around the blockhouses near the Titans. The union, in protest against the awarding of this contract to the New Jersey plant, which was a non-union shop, struck the entire Canaveral base, costing hundreds of thousands of dollars simply because it had a feud with a New Jersey plant. This is Victor Rizzell.
The latest on the government some people insist will get into the UN. Our newswires carried dispatch from Taipei, Formosa today, quoting nationalist Chinese sources as saying that Red China is continuing her exports of food, despite the fact that millions in mainland China are starving. The nationalist sources say that 1 million tons of food supplies were shipped to Russia last year, and that other large shipments are continuing at a time when the Chinese people are facing the worst famine in years. This information from Taipei, together with similar reports from other sources, leads to the conclusion that Red China's current famine is at least partly man-made. The food shipments to Russia are in payment for Soviet arms and industrial supplies sold to the Red Chinese. Shipments to Africa and Cuba obviously are designed to further the political aims of the Chinese communist rulers. The fact that the exports caused starvation among the Chinese people is not permitted to interfere with objectives of the state. This weird situation makes it difficult for the humanitarian nations of the world to give aid to the Chinese people. How could they do it without subsidizing Red China's arms program? And how could they be sure that the donation of food supplies would not result in increased Red Chinese exports, which would leave the Chinese people in the same sorry plight?